Good morning. Oh, hello. Well, if that's how you do rapture, God bless you. That's great. Thank you very much. Great to be with you. Fantastic to hear Liz's story, especially the story from the A34. And to be honest, I thought of other stories from A34, but I couldn't hold a candle to that story. Hey. Well, yeah, I'd had a few minutes to think about it. Ka-ching. Great to be with you again. Thank you for your introduction. Formerly General Secretary of the Baptist Union, always a laugh. I was looked after our Baptist family nationally for 7 years, the 2,000 Baptist churches of which you're a part, and it was a privilege to do that. But the title that really matters to me is Friend of Simon and mentor to Simon, and so it's a privilege to walk with him. And I was really keen to be with you on a Sunday morning at some point and to share this, which is just great. I've got things in my hands. I always have things in my hands. Youth and children's work. I do some work with Premier Radio, which I am hugely committed to. More than 1 million people listen to Premier Radio. We've got 3 radio stations. If you don't know about it, tune in, find out, because it's a fantastic resource. But we also publish a number of things, youth and children's work, hugely expensive, £5.95, but really worth every penny of it if you work with youth and children. Free today if you get there quick enough. Today is Women's Day or something, which is just lovely. We've just taken over the title Women Alive. And again, you may well not have seen this, but we're really putting some energy into this, and I commend it to you. And if you are a woman, only you can tell, but if you're a woman, or you know a woman, do please feel free to take a copy of that. And there are various copies of it around, which is great. So, I feel really privileged to be here as a visitor, but starting you off on a new series, this Four Tables idea, which has been so clearly introduced. And it's the idea of saying, we want to welcome other people to know Jesus, and we can do it by progressing from one table to another. There's the table of our being at work, a sort of office desk, or wherever you happen to be during the week. There's then the coffee table, the chat with people. There's the dinner table, welcoming people, getting to know people better. And the fourth week, looking at the communion table, our desire is to welcome people into the family of God. But today we're looking at sort of the office desk. We're looking at where we spend our lives day by day. And brilliant to hear Liz's story. I just love TTT and have encouraged churches to use that for years, because it's just good to hear what people are doing day by day, and we will think of Liz in her particular situation. But what interests me in this moment is how we got here today. Why are we here in church today? What's the journey that led us to go to church at all? And I'd be fascinated to know the stories that are here this morning. And, you know, everybody has a distinctive story. But a bit of audience participation, if you can cope. I know you're sitting there comfortably and thinking, oh, it's not going to get me to do something, is he? I am. The reason I started going to church was because my parents took me. They didn't consult with me in the pram and say, now, Jonathan, know that you're only 3 months old, but would you like to go to church today? Would you find that fascinating? They just took me. And indeed, in the early years of my life, there wasn't a question about going to church at all. Into my teens, then there was a question. But I went to church because my parents took me. Would you please, humour me, stand up if you were taken to church by your parents? Just stand up now, if you're able to do so. That's really, really interesting, isn't it? I would judge that's 70% or so. Do sit down. Stand up now if you came. So you're a different group. You haven't stood up already. But stand up if you came to church because of a friend. A friend encouraged you to come to church. This is now your moment. A friend. I mean, wow. Some good friends around. I mean, that's a smaller group, but still very significant. I'm judging this isn't statistically accurate, but about 20%, do sit down before somebody checks me and disagrees. And stand up now if you came on your own initiative. You saw the website, or you got a bit of information, you read a book, you took the initiative by yourself to come to church with any other influence. Brilliant. Love it. Do sit down. Thank you so much for standing. Well done, recent convert. But that's really significant, isn't it? Do you know, I almost feel I could stop the sermon now, because what we've said is the responsibility for parents, grandparents is huge. The family, you know, that was the overwhelming majority of you had come because of family influence like that. A significant number because of friends, and I celebrate that. That's brilliant. And distinguished few of you had come on your own initiative, which is just brilliant. Sufficient to say that in these days, you know, one of the things we need, as well as loving, inviting parents and good friends, is we need, and you have, a good website. We need to have a presence which clearly presents who we are. So for me personally, yes, I came to church because of my parents, so I'm in the majority group. When I got to my teens, I was acquiring something called a brain. Had it previously, but was using it more carefully. And I looked at the church and thought, you know, this is okay, but I'm starting to form some questions about it. I don't find it totally credible. I find some of the things that Christians say doubtful, frankly. I wasn't quite getting it, and I was struggling. So why did I keep going to church? I kept going to church. I kept in these things because of encouragement. Because people, I remember distinctly, very distinctly, I was probably 15, and one of my youth leaders said to me, "Jonathan, you know, it's great you still come to church, and just know that Diana and I," this youth leader was Tim, he said, "Diana and I pray for you every day." And I went, wow. You know, people were investing in me. People were encouraging me. People were giving me jobs to do. You know, I was involved in the church. And within that, I sort of worked through my questions and my doubts. So that's a little bit about me. For a moment, let's talk about us together then. It's brilliant you stood up, and that's a very powerful image in my mind of the mixture of experiences that we have. Can we do those dot pictures again? And for me just to speak to them for a moment. Brilliant. So this is us. 6% of the population, did you hear what was said by Megan at the beginning? 6% who go to church at least once a month. So it's not weekly attendance, which is what we used to count. We now count monthly attendance. So it's a small percentage of the population. And there is a sense in which we are in a corner. This is, if you like, what we call the gathered church. We've gathered together here today. The majority of people have no knowledge of what happens when Christians gather together. It's something weird. They may know that there's a church local to them, but they haven't a single clue what goes on inside that church. So that's where we are on a Sunday. Go to the next one, if we may. Thank you. The next dot. So this is where we are during the week, which is really exciting, and it's good to see the contrast, isn't it? This is what Liz was illustrating earlier. I find this really exciting. We are about 100 people here this morning. Let's say modestly, because it behoves us to be modest. Let's keep with the, yeah, no, the one before. Let's say modestly that we have contact with 20 people outside the church during the week. Some of you are teachers and you say, well, I've done that by 10 to 9 tomorrow morning, you know, but bear with me. Let's say on average about 20 people a week we have significant contact with, influence on, people we rub shoulders with, and we would have perhaps significant conversations with. Let's call it 20. That means that we here this morning, 100 people, have contact with 2,000 people this coming week. I find that really exciting. It's not just about us here this morning, the little gathered group in a corner. We will have those relationships, and knowing that 2,000 is probably a very modest figure. It's probably thousands more than that. But it's we have influence, is what we're saying. And the next slide just illustrates that the way in which we have, if we can see the next slide, the way in which, there we go, we have that wider influence for God day by day. Thanks for that. So let's go to the Bible passage now, which is from Matthew chapter 28. And a fantastic passage which we all know really well. All the Gospels end with Jesus going, saying to his disciples, now go out and do something about it. So here's Matthew 28, which for some reason I didn't look up earlier. Here we go. Then the 11 disciples went to Galilee, to the mountain where Jesus had told them to go. When they saw him, they worshipped him, but some doubted. Then Jesus came to them and said, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you, and surely I am with you always to the very end of the age. Jesus has risen from death, and so on his resurrection authority, he says, go. Go to the whole world, make disciples of all nations. He's speaking to everyone. And I want you to hear this. And what interests me in this passage is the way in which Matthew honestly presents what happened that day. Because he says, when they saw him, this is the Mount of Ascension, this is the big moment. He's going to his right hand, his Father's right hand in glory. He says, when they saw him, they worshipped him. And you think, yeah, that's what we'd expect. But he then adds the tantalizing detail, but some doubted. I'm so grateful he added that detail. Those of you who are journalists would say, he could have left it accurately by saying they worshipped him, because worship did go on. He didn't have to add that detail, but some doubted, but he does. So what happens next? You might have thought that Jesus would say, okay, I now need you in two groups. Over here, I'd like to have those who are really, really sure of me and strong in their faith. And then over here, I'll have those of you who've got some doubts, and I'd just love you to go on a six-week course, at the end of which we're going to be able to do something. He doesn't do that. We might do it. He doesn't do that. He says to all of them, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Go. He sends them all out. And I want to convince you this morning that if you love Jesus, even if you say, oh, Jonathan, maybe, but I'm very wobbly. If you love Jesus and you're seeking to live for Christ, then Christ sends you out this week. He's sending you to your place of work. He's sending you to the place where you do your leisure. He's sending you to your homes with your neighbors. He's sending you out on his authority. The word that is used particularly in Luke and in Acts is the word witnesses. You're witnesses. You've all seen something of the goodness of God. You've had an experience of God's forgiveness. You've known God's presence with you through difficult times. God sends all of you out as witnesses. In my teens, I spent a huge amount of time in courts of law, and I thought I was going to train to become a barrister and went to Oxford to do so. But then when I was 19, the Lord called me to ministry. But I spent a lot of time in the Old Bailey, which was fascinating. In my loving Christian home, to be honest, I had learnt little about life. In the Old Bailey, I learned an awful lot about life and the dark side of life. And it was, for me, absolutely gripping and fascinating. But I go into the local magistrates' courts and the Crown Courts, in Southend, my home, and then go up the line to London, to the Old Bailey, and it absolutely fascinating. And I learned what a good witness was. A good witness is somebody who sticks to what they have seen and heard, And if they stray from that and start saying, well, I heard somebody else say in a pub that, the judge is going to bring them straight back and say, I just want to know what you have seen and heard. All of you are witnesses. All of you. Of course, we all like to say, oh, we leave that to the staff. We leave that to the ministers. We leave that to the leaders of the church because they're so articulate and they're so lovely and they're trained in it and all of that. Friends, hear this. You're a witness. You have seen and heard something of Jesus. For those of you who are very young Christians, firstly, let me celebrate. It's fantastic that you've become a Christian. Can I also tell you that you are particularly powerful as a witness? Indeed, in many ways, you're more powerful than people like me, because people say, well, you're a salesman for it, aren't you? You've been doing it. Of course you've got the gift of the gab. Of course you've got the answers to the questions. But the person who says, 3 months ago, I wouldn't have been found dead in a church. But Jesus has just come into my life, and can't give you many answers, but I just feel at peace. That is so powerful. That is so powerful. So don't look down on yourself if you're a new Christian. Don't look down on yourself if you're thinking, but I'll never be able to answer their questions because they're really clever where I work. And I know they'll come up with loads of stuff like, if there's a loving God, why does he allow coronavirus? Why doesn't your God, if he is a loving God, go zap and finish it off? And you're thinking, I don't want to get into that because I'm going to feel really silly because I don't know the answer. Can I tell you this? Because I think a lot of people say this. They don't like the idea of even sharing their faith in case they get really difficult questions. Let me say this to you. The very best answer, the most disarming answer, the one that's most likely to be helpful to other people is, I don't know. Just be honest. I honestly don't know why God has allowed coronavirus. But thanks for the question. I'll talk to some other folk and see if I can find a good answer for you. But never be afraid to say you don't know. You're witnessing not to having 95 really good answers to really good questions. You're witnessing to Jesus. You're witnessing to the fact that he's had an impact on your life. So don't be fearful of being, as you think of it, a poor witness. Just be a witness. We're all sent out. We're sent out with authority. This is important. We're not saying this stuff about four tables, welcoming more people in, all that, because the church has got a recruitment drive and we need more people. We would like more people because they bring in money and then the organization can continue. You know, it's not that. We're doing this because Jesus has said go. Because on his authority, he has said, you must go and make disciples of all nations. I believe these are days of fantastic opportunity for the church because people know that these are very uncertain times. They're scary times. We don't know what the world will be like outside Europe. We don't know. It may be fantastic. But there are many things to cause us to feel jittery. Coronavirus is very scary. It shakes people. It's shaking our society. It's shaking the way the world economy works. Where are we going to be in 6 months' time? Nobody can tell you. Nobody. We do not know. These are shaking times. Climate change, the recent storms, and we do feel for those dear folk who've had water in inappropriate places in their homes. What a terrible thing. You know, water is so wonderful, isn't it, in the right places, and disastrous in the wrong places. Shaking times. I believe we have an audience. I believe people want to hear what we have to say. Hear this, friends. We're being sent out with authority. Jesus is sending us out to do this work of being witnesses, all of us. I'll be there with you. But all of us are part of sharing the good news of Jesus. We go with the authority of Jesus. Think of this. We think of Liz and her work with the police. And now just picture where you will be this time tomorrow, whatever the company, whatever kind of folk you'll be with. This time tomorrow, interestingly, I will not be with Christians. You think, oh, it's a minister. He must be with Christians all the time. I won't be at 11 o'clock tomorrow morning. So as I think of where I'll be, I'm there with the authority of the risen Lord Jesus. That's what you need to know. When I was heading off down the legal route, I worked for some solicitors in the holidays, and that was, I really enjoyed that, actually. I was doing very humble work, but one of the tasks I often had to do was to take documents from that firm's solicitors up to our barristers in London, Chancery Lane. And I felt so important, I remember at the time, because I'd go to the clerk of the chambers and would present these documents, as you'd expect, pink ribbon, all, you know, properly done. And I'd present them to them, and I would say to them, I am from Bates, Son and Braby, as in, be very afraid. You know, I mean, I'm from Bates, Son and Braby. They weren't remotely interested that I was Jonathan Edwards. You know, I didn't come into it. I was from Bates, Son and Braby. They had sent me. It was on their authority and clearly was delivering to them documents they knew they needed. They were pleased to see me. Tomorrow we go out. We are important as individuals, but we're going with the authority of the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. When you sit at your desk, when you go to school, college, when you go to your homes, when you go to the shops, when you pay for your petrol, diesel, whatever it is, you know, as you spend your time out there in the world, you're doing it with the authority of the Lord Jesus Christ. You may be thinking, well, Jonathan, where is your front line? What's my front line? And it, ministers are interesting because it is true in the nature of being a minister, and I've now been a church leader for 45 years, and I'd just like some of you to work out, you must have been a teenager, which I was. I was a teenager. Those of you who think, you're probably about 30 at the time, you can go home now. You certainly won't get a Christmas card. But anyway, 45 years ago, I was assistant to the minister of Banbury Baptist Church, which was a fantastic blessing at the time. Then went to Oxford, to Regents, where Simon is studying now, and then to India, then to Suffolk, then to Kent, then to Devon, and then to Berkshire. You know, reaching the pinnacle, you've worked that out. But something that has troubled me through the years is actually most of the time I do spend with Christians. So for the last 7 years since I left being General Secretary of the Baptist Union, I have a little business. And it's deliberately so that I have real relationships and real contacts outside the church. It takes about a day a week. Can slip into other days, but basically about a day a week. And you're now going to wonder what this little business is. I, through my life, have been a collector. My father, grandfather before me were collectors. So I'm a dealer in old stamps and old postcards. And there will probably be two people in the congregation for whom that means an awful lot. And everybody else is thinking, blah, blah. Anyway, I sell these through antique shops. So this is my front line. I have more opportunities to talk about Jesus, fresh opportunity to talk about Jesus through my little business than any other part of my life. I mean, this isn't a bad opportunity, I get that, but lovely opportunities I get almost weekly. It's amazing for talking about Jesus. Take one instance, amazing. I went into one of the shops, I won't say where, it's all a bit local, and but recently had a new owner, thrusting businessman, don't mess with me sort of approach, which I'm actually fine with that. We know where we are with one another. But, you know, he's determined to be successful, and why not? And I have a little stall, you know, the sort of centres. I have a little stall in that centre and don't have to man it. I just pay a rent and they take whatever I sell. So I hadn't been very well. I actually had cellulitis and been rushed into hospital. But have been sorted quite quickly. Went into the shop, and the girls on the desk, they all said, oh, Jonathan, great to see you. How are you doing? It's lovely to see you. Are you feeling better and all that? And it was all nice, sweet. I went to the back of the shop, and Vince came after me. And he just came up to me. It was just the two of us, quiet, nobody else around. And he said to me, "Jonathan, the Lord was really with you, wasn't he?" And I said, "You bet he was. But Vince, forgive me, why are you using that kind of language?" He said, "I'll tell you a story." He said, "My dad was an atheist. All his life he was an atheist. He told me I had to be an atheist. I was an atheist all his life. On his deathbed, my dad had the cheek to say to me, 'I think there must be something in it after all.'" He said, "I felt I'd been misled all my life." All my life he'd said, "It's a load of poppycock, it's a load of rubbish, they're just stupid people, they're just, you know, all that stuff." No respect for anybody who had faith. On his deathbed, he said, "I think there must be something in it." And he said, that set me on a journey. And he told me something about his journey to faith and how he'd learnt of the Lord. Vince has still got a lot of confusions, but what a fantastic conversation. And as we have a relationship, we meet with one another, I've just been given an open door to share with Vince and to support him and to help him as he goes on that journey. Something I love is why Jesus, I do recommend that all of you have a little tract. This is by Nikki Gumbel. It's obviously a sort of introduction to the Alpha Course. I get through hundreds of these. I just spread them around because I think it's just great. But if somebody's asking questions in your place of work or your next door, have one of these. I was walking through Newbury last summer with another 200 of these. I buy them by the 200 and move them on. And a mate of mine who runs the antique centre in Newbury, he said, "Oh, John, hi, John. Yeah, what have you got in your arm?" And it's quite heavy, actually, 200 of them. And I said, "Oh, it's a little booklet introducing Christian faith." He said, "Oh, that's really interesting. Can I have one?" So I break open this, you know, beautifully sealed commandment, give him a copy. I pick up my car. I'm driving back through town past the shop, and I see he is sitting outside the shop, sunny day, reading this. I told my wife this, Sue, and she said he probably did it for effect, which is healthy cynicism. I get that. Anyway, went into the shop a day or two later. I said, "How are things going?" He said, "I read your booklet." He said, "Actually, last night I went through it for the second time." And again, it's led to a fantastic conversation. Fantastic conversation. It's just about, it's not about me going in and being a preacher. It's just being there. It's just being there. I said my first church was in Suffolk. First church as a sort of proper minister was in Suffolk in Bury St. Edmunds. And I went back for a funeral just a few weeks ago. And Russell came up to me. And Russell said, "Jonathan, great to see you." He said, "It's because of you that I'm a Christian." And that means everything, doesn't it? I mean, that's what we're about, and that's great. And I said, "Oh, Russell, great to see you. How's Margaret?" And, you know, we had a lovely conversation. I didn't tell him that he was wrong because I thought it would be rude and I just needed to accept the kind of things he wanted to say. But the truth is that I was a link in the chain. Far more significant than me was his wife, Margaret, who loved him and encouraged him to come to church. I also think of neighbours who I know were wonderful to Russell and encouraged him to do things which helped him towards faith. I was there. I was part of it. I'm not saying I wasn't part of it. But I wasn't the reason he became a Christian. There were loads of reasons. There were loads of people involved in that process. That is to say, we were links in the chain. And friends, whoever you are, you may have a theological degree. You may not know what the word theology means. You may have known God all of your life, or you might have met Jesus as your Savior and friend 3 or 4 days ago. All of you, all of you are called by Jesus to be links in the chain. And that's what this course is all about. How can we be a link in the chain, helping people to know more about Jesus?